Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Shope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. Hot one. Although I'm going outside during breaks to cool off today. Because of whatever today's deal is here in this room.
It's just this room. Did you notice the hallway right outside the door is where the heat starts? And I've never experienced that in 25 years of coming in here to do shows. This room has had erratic temperature problems for the entirety of the time that we've been working here. But it's boiling hot outside there in the hallway, too, which is weird. Don't know what's happening there.
The guys before us left the door open.
Right.
Which I would never do, but
I've done it when I'm in here by myself on days where I'm about to start. You know, I work harder when you're not here, and I can feel sure. Like I'm just going to sweat through this hoodie if I don't open. I got to open the door.
Well, just a peek behind the curtain. Which, if you're watching us today, we're both sweating profusely.
Yeah, it's gross.
With us now, hopefully not sweating profusely, as Mike Giardi.
Very comfortable.
Boston Sports Journal, Boston famous for so many things, including Boston Stadium.
Yes. Isn't that lovely, Boston Stadium? Are they trying to smoke you out of the building?
Maybe.
Might be, Mike. I don't know.
They're out of ideas, Mike. They're out of ideas to get rid of us.
We're streaming, so we can't. The shirts and skins is not going to work in here.
Tarps off.
Our audience is ready for that, but I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, well.
You know what, though? Now think about that. If you went shirts and skins, maybe that would force management's hand because there'd be, you don't know what kind of reaction you would get on the stream. And now they might be like, you know what? All right, we got to go in there and fix this.
Ghastly is a word that comes to mind, in my case anyway.
It might require pants and skins to get that kind of a meeting. But who knows? Maybe you're right. Mike, so it's been a while. We always enjoy your visits. How has this Patriots offseason been to cover? And I ask that, not to be cute or funny. I feel like this would be the worst kind of a story to have to cover, to talk about, because it's so personal with Mike Vrabel. And, it's also interesting on a media level, of course, too, with Diana Russini. But has it been awkward, Mike?
Yeah, I would say unpleasant would be a word that I would use and say would come to mind. I think brief, but maybe the first week, it was really a media story more than it was a football story because, look, two consenting adults, if you are to believe that there was a relationship there, these are two consenting adults married, but, whatever. We don't know the backstories or anything like that. But then when it became clear, I reported early on, some of the players were like, what's happening here? Why are we talking about this? Like this guy tells us, oftentimes, make good decisions on and off the field. And was he making good decisions? But I would say, and then, of course, he misses the third day of the draft, which is unheard of. I still can't find an example of a coach willingly not being there. The team pushed back a little bit. I think there was like, why are you guys covering this story? I think there was some of that. I think, which made it more uncomfortable. But I would tell you the last month or so, the energy has shifted, and everybody's kind of gotten off that. Not that it still doesn't – it's not – I mean, it's still there, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, there's been nothing new. And based on what we've seen at practice and from the people that I've talked to behind the scenes, Vrabel's back to being Vrabel. And, that's probably the most important thing for the organization and for the football team is that your coach is as dialed in as he was – last year when you helped resurrect the program.
Mike, was there a moment through this, or might there still be on the horizon, anything that you thought could cause the Patriots to move on him?
I mean, the only thing I could think of, you know, would be that when all this stuff came out, and then more stuff came out after the, you know, the initial sort denials. Of denial to to Page Six, is that if he told them, hey, nothing, like, this is it, you know, whatever he told them, he told them, and they said, there's going to be no more surprises, and he said, there'd be no more surprises, and the only thing that would get me to think that they would consider it is if there were more surprises, which, again, we haven't had any of those in since the, you know, right. The outset of the story.
Man, it always drives me nuts when you get the, why are you talking about this retort?
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst.
I don't subscribe to it. I had a lot of people, you know, yell at me, you know, fans or whatever, mm-hmm. some of our readers, like, these are two adults. I'm like, yeah, they are. And I wouldn't cover the story if the story didn't impact football. We could all look at it. It might be a talker around the water cooler. It might be a talker on sports talk radio. But the moment, to me, it started to impact football was the moment it became the story that I had to write about often and talk about often. And not pleasant. And I didn't delve into their families and whatever. It was strictly about, this is what happened. Okay, what's it doing to the football team? And that's, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I mean, I can get a little bit carried away, but whenever there's a Bills, I'm not even sure what the last one would have been. Maybe it's a long time ago, but whenever there's a thing like that, and whatever it is, and fans come at you with, they think you're tearing it down. Like, they think that by talking about it, I'm causing harm to the Bills. And, like, you know what? Yeah. Can guys like yourself, Mike, or us, if I may, get some sort of benefit of the doubt for our own judgment, right? I mean, like, you're very reasonable in how you lay that out. This is where the line gets drawn. And, you know, sometimes off-the-field things can be meaningful to an organization, and that's what we have to decide when we're deciding whether to talk about a thing. So, I don't know. That one, always drives me crazy.
No, it definitely, there were moments where it definitely sort of went in my ear hole the wrong way, and I would say, you know, I think some of the people on the beat did a terrible job. Like, if I'm just going to be a media columnist for a second, there are people who just didn't want to do the story. So they didn't do the story. The only time they did anything with the story is if it was clear, like, we were talking about it. We were asking questions and it was getting answers, and you'd be negligent in your job by not writing it up, but they were aggregators. They weren't the people that asked questions, and, you know, maybe their relationship will be better with the organization and some of the people in it, or Mike in particular, because they didn't ask questions. I mean, that's ridiculous to me, but if right. that's the way it is, that's the way it is. Yeah. I'm not trying to, like, wear the hero cape. Like, I'm just doing my job. So, yeah, that did burn me a little bit, I think, that just several people who are in important positions decided to sit this out. And I don't think that that's good business and good journalism, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mike, one last thing from me, at least, on this topic. Do you have any sense, or do you get any sense from the Patriots themselves, whether they're bracing for this to be like every Wednesday around the conference call, opposing markets, like, you know, after games, like, that it's every city's going to be, you know, similar questions? Or do you think maybe, you know, will they, we've seen, you know, media relations people step in and steer. We just watched the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, put Carter Hart in a bubble, basically. Like, you're not asking them about what happened in London, Ontario in 2018. Are they bracing for, like, this to be, like, sort of a tour of the country, so to speak, when they go?
Well, I would say, for starters, that the wonderful conference call that we used to have, that sort of went the way of the dodo bird about 5 or 6 years ago, in terms of, I think Mike did one last year with the Tennessee media, which was obvious because it's, you know, he had past relationships.
Wow.
But I that's sort of gone. Okay. I would say that they'd be foolish not to acknowledge that there are going to be people that are going to come in there and ask questions when we're on the road. Realize there's probably going to be an element in the stands, or, you know, that Mike might get harassed. It might be signage, whatever. Like, that's just part of it. You created it. I'm sure they'll be mad about it, but, like, there's nothing you can do about it. If the rules allow signs to be brought in or chants or whatever, they're probably going to get some of those.
With Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. Well, Mike, let's talk football. So here come the Patriots off a Super Bowl appearance. And, you know, I feel like I'm having the same conversation about them every time, which is just like, but the schedule last year. Mm-hmm. They were good, but the schedule was so easy. How much for you does that tell you the story of last year's team? Like, is it a team that overachieved? Is it a team that just had a pretty much a joyride? I mean, they had to be pretty good to do what they did. Yeah.
I give them a ton of credit because I think the schedule, you know, again, Patriot fans will rail against this, and some other outlets would too. Like, you beat who's in front of you, and to their credit, they never had that slip up. You know, they won 16 out of 17 games, and there was probably four or five of those in there that, you know, the trap game, you know, that sort of concept, and they didn't allow that to happen. They, in many cases, they actually overwhelmed those teams. So I think there was a part of Vrabel used the line at one point, you know, I told the players, sometimes you have to believe before you see it. And I think the team sort of bought into that notion, like, hey, even at the 1-2 start, like, we're doing some really good things. It's happening. The foundation we laid in the spring and the summer is happening. And then when it took off, it was sort of like, this guy's a genius. You know, like, he was right. We can do this. And so, I like I said, I give him a ton of credit for the way they mentally handled a lot of what happened. And I think they got a lot better as a football team over the course of the year too, which, you know, that's what you're aiming for. Belichick used to say all the time, like, Brady, we want to be playing our best football after Thanksgiving. I think there was a stretch there where they did play their best football after Thanksgiving. And then, you know, they weathered a storm in the postseason where they played one elite defense after another and managed to survive those games, even if their offense wasn't at the same level it had been during the regular season. So, I guess what I would say after the whole thing and kind of going back and rewatching and going over my notes is that they're probably more talented than I gave them credit for. And so, and now I think the roster is even better than it was. Now the schedule will be more difficult. They're no longer the, you know, the sort of team that's flying under the radar. They're going to be the hunted team. And I think there'll be a little bit of a course correction, but I think it's a playoff team. And as you know, you get in the playoffs and who knows what can happen.
They weathered the storm, and they weathered two snowstorms in the process in the playoffs. So Bills and Patriots together, I mean, they're 1-2 in some order in every, you know, prediction, every betting site and whatever. It really does seem hard for me to, like, imagine a season where it's not these two teams as 1-2 in some order with how – how much backpedaling the Dolphins seem to have done and the Jets being probably still the Jets. I mean, do you see it any other way?
Sure, multiple times. And you know, more recently after having watched minicamp and whatnot, we were able to be in attendance for. And to me, it's like a toss-up. You just, if you go by position, it's almost like 11 wins for the Patriots, 11 wins for the, you know, like, the, that, to me, it's that even. So I think there's going to be, you know, obviously injuries play a massive role, as they always do. Heaven forbid anything happens to either quarterback. And then you have the coaching question. You know, is Joe Brady, is he up to it? Because he's inheriting a football team that, even though the owner said, we don't have to win now, it's a win now, they're kind of in a win now, right? I mean, you have Josh Allen. You have some important pieces like that where you couldn't get over that quote-unquote playoff wall or playoff hump, however you phrased it. Well, you kept a guy that was part of it for at least a couple years who couldn't help get you over that hump. So I'm really curious about, I would say the edge for me right now would have to be with the Patriots slightly because of the coaching, because we just don't know if Joe Brady can be the head coach that they think he can be. And Jim Leonard is wildly praised across the league. It doesn't matter who you talk to, but like, his first time calling plays in the National Football League. So we'll see what that looks like as well.
Right. And how long it'll take them or him to find the guys he wants and the spots he wants. Cause there's a lot of that here so far this offseason. We got guys putting on weight and dropping weight and changing it. So yeah, there's a lot that has to come together. Mike, we know what the Bills did going into Josh Allen's third year, and that was trade for Stephon Diggs. Now, the Patriots did that last year, bringing Diggs in, you know, not in the form he was in 2020 when he got here, but still a great year from him, I'd say, at his age. But A.J. Brown now is in the role of Diggs for Allen back in 2020, But it's also Dobbs too, and that's reminiscent of, you know, the Bills, Cole Beasley, John Brown, eventually Diggs. What do you make of the two new receivers, at least?
I was, I don't want to say unimpressed by Dobbs, but it just, I think it's coming a little bit slower, at least to what we saw. You know, we only saw three mandatory minicamp practices, and I want to say three OTAs over the course of the spring. It looks like he's still sort of figuring things out. Brown came in right away, and it was like, oh, yeah, that's A.J. Brown. You know, the back shoulder stuff, some of the contested stuff, like boxing dudes out. You know, he wasn't going up against Carlton Davis and Christian Gonzalez, but he looked very much like the A.J. Brown who you've seen go over 1,000 yards in, I think, six of his seven seasons in the league. So there was almost like an instant chemistry between those two guys. I know they're talking about getting together again sometime in the next few weeks to kind of continue building on that. But that looked impressive. And there's more depth at that position, I think, than they've had. You know, you guys obviously know Matt Collins. He had a really good year last year. They're still high on Pop Douglas. They're high on Kyle Williams, their third-round pick from a year ago. So they feel like they have more there to throw at you than probably they have, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years, maybe going back to the 2017. And I'm not comparing the two by any stretch of the imagination, but sort of just in terms of the amount of depth and like proven NFL players that they have, that's sort of where the comparison comes from me.
Mike, maybe that answers this question. I wonder if Drake May has like a level up that he can reach, you know, Bulldog mentioning Diggs for Allen. Diggs, I think, deserves a lot of credit for Allen's ascent. I mean, he launched at that point, and now he's a superstar in the league. May is 23. Allen is 30 now. So is Mahomes. Burrow and Jackson are coming up on 30 themselves. Like, there's a spot here for May in this conference if he's on that level to, you know, maybe outlast those guys. That's sort of the long-term view. But if he has another level up to go, what would it be? Like, where would you think, or where do the Patriots say they want to see better from him, if anywhere?
I'm glad you asked that, because I actually just wrote about this, and it's something that they're challenging him with, and it's about more control at the line of scrimmage. You know, I think they felt like in the postseason, and look, there were other issues at play. You know, the offensive line was hurt and underperforming, et cetera, but you know, Josh McDaniels was great about giving his quarterbacks the answers, but maybe they didn't feel like he had a full enough grasp on that. So they really, I think, in this offseason, instead of this just being sort of the teaching camp, they're, you know, as they always tell you, oh, we're not really evaluating, we're just teaching at this time of year, they really pushed him. There was a number of times during the course of the minicamp where they would have him run tempo, he'd get to the line of scrimmage, and then they wouldn't give him a play. And then with 18 seconds left on the clock, it was up to him to call the play. So he's got to read the defense. He's got to call the play. He's got to get him in the right, you know, you got to know what your personnel is, because we're not running people in and out. This is what you got. You got to figure out how to make this work. And I think that's been a real thing for them, is to sort of push him mentally so that, you know, if he encounters the Seattle defense again, which he will in week one, but that sort of thing, like, do you have better answers where you can almost calm yourself down in those moments and not need Josh or Mike to do that for you?
I think last year at this time, there were probably plenty of column inches written and lots of words spoken about Will Campbell's arms. Going into year two.
They didn't get longer. It didn't get any longer.
They didn't find a way to make that happen?
No.
How stable is that situation in your view, Mike?
Vrabel loves him. So I think they look at him and say the player he was before the knee injury and the player that he was after, and that was basically the playoff run when you all saw him get beat on the regular in the playoffs, they feel like he's more of the guy that you saw before the injury, when I would say for his rookie year, he was fine, you know, like probably middle of the pack at left tackle. And they feel like he's stronger, he's healthier. There were some things they obviously want him to work on. He's one of those guys, if you're into line play, he's always been able to get away with, because he's such a good athlete, of almost waiting until the last minute receiving guys, and then he's able to drop his butt down and anchor and sort of hold guys off. Well, it was a little harder to do at the National Football League level because everybody's just that much better. And I think that's part of the thing they wanted to work on with him and get better. They did draft Caleb Lomu in the first round. That's a left tackle by the way, looks more like a left tackle, like body-wise, than Will Campbell does. Got longer arms, wider shoulders, the whole nine yards. He's already been thrown into the mix as the right tackle, with Morgan Moses kind of being in and out during the course of the spring, which is typical for someone 35 years old. They're managing. But he looks like he fits. We'll see what it looks like again when the pads come on, because Will Campbell looked awesome before the pads came on too. And then, you know, you deal with the variety of challenges that you get. But I think there are people in the building that think if Loma was one of the best five and that his best spot is left tackle, then maybe Will moves. But for now, I think in Vrabel's mind, it's Will Campbell at left tackle until he declares otherwise.
Couple of quick ones for you, Mike, before we run out of time. Are you surprised they got the opener in Seattle?
I think, yeah, you know what, and I don't care what they say. To me, that's all about Vrabel's story. Because I don't think anybody was clamoring for Seattle Patriots again. That wasn't a very good football game. You know, we've had Super Bowl rematches before where you're like, that's a great game. That's going to be awesome to see them roll it back and have this chip on their shoulder. That game was a pretty one-sided affair. They can tell me what they want, but I'm pretty sure that had something to do with Vrabel being in the news all off season.
I was thinking about that as a reason why it wouldn't get picked, but maybe I had it wrong.
Ratings, you get mom, you know, who doesn't pay attention to this or whatever. Like, ooh, that Vrabel, like, oh, I'm going to watch this. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know how they go through it, but to me, that was a clear influence.
Okay. And quickly, Mike, how about the running backs? Henderson is a rookie. I think maybe it's surprising to think that he had more yards. I mean, like 3-2 by ratio over Stevenson, but very little work in the postseason. What did he have? Like maybe 2 touches against Denver or something like that, Henderson?
Yeah.
And he had that big game against the Bills, too, where he scored a couple of long ones. What do you think they want to do there?
I mean, I think they'd like for Henderson to be the 55-45 guy maybe with Stevenson. I think they still like Ramondre Value, the physical nature with which he runs. But, you know, Henderson's big problem was he became such a liability in pass protection, which is crazy because, like, coming out of Ohio State, that was, like, at the top of the list of things that he did well, that he basically became sort of unplayable, you know, or damn near close to it, you know, certain plays or whatnot. And they'd like more consistency there from a running style. You know, he did have 4 or 5 long touchdown runs this year. And last year, you can't take those out of the equation. But, like, the down-to-down consistency and getting what's there or maybe getting a little bit more, that didn't happen nearly enough for them. So I think big sort of offseason for him to sort of study, figure out how to slow himself down, because I think sometimes he's just too fast for the hole. And they're hoping that little increased patience will lead to, you know, him getting those extra yards that he didn't get last year.
10 total touchdowns for Henderson, but just 2.5 yards per carry in the playoffs for New England. Even with that snow, he couldn't pull off 3 yards per carry. But I like him in fantasy. Okay.
That's smart. That's smart. With that speed, he's guaranteed to break 4 or 5, I think, pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike. Any questions for us?
No, what do you guys do? Like, well, first of all, did management reach out yet, or are you going to lose the shirts?
I am not looking at my phone. They're going to have to.
I'm telling you, I think this is my advice. Just lose the shirts and see what happens.
Yeah, well, a lot of people disagree with you, I think.
Yeah. my family.
We know this one better.
I think, Mike.
We know ourselves better than you might know us in this area. Okay. Thanks for your time, as always, Mike. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate you. Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. Bulldog, you drafting more Stevenson? He's cheaper than Henderson. How are you playing it? I'll hang up and listen. Big fan.
I wouldn't waste my time with Stevenson. I think Henderson ascends and takes the lion's share of the carries there. Yep.
All right.
There's a take.
Stevenson is off your board.
Yep.
As Jacob Sanderson will put it, maybe tonight on ADP Chasing this very way, I don't even see his name. When I look at the queue, I don't even see his name.
Nope. Dead to me.
I never pick him because he's never on my rankings at the area. Somebody takes him already. I just never see his name. I like picking Stevenson, but you might be right. 803-0550 for us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
I guess what I would say after the whole thing and kind of going back and rewatching and going over my notes is that they're probably more talented than I gave them credit for. And now I think the roster is even better than it was. Now the schedule will be more difficult. They're no longer, you know, the sort of team that's flying under the radar. They're going to be the hunted team. And I think there'll be a little bit of a course correction. I think it's a playoff team. And as you know, you get in the playoffs, and who knows what can happen.
Mike Giardi, our recent guest from the Boston Sports Journal. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening. We have Jeremy Kahn out of Baltimore scheduled for tomorrow. I think probably Sal will be on tomorrow. Thursday, we have Matt Larkin from the World of Hockey.
Daily Faceoff is his outlet now. Yeah.
And Matthew Collar also will join us on Thursday.
And Brian intermittently here.
Brian tomorrow.
It's U.S. Open week, right? So I got to make my picks. I assume we're talking to Brian at 6 tomorrow for that?
6 tomorrow.
And then usually we'll talk to him on a Thursday or a Friday when a major's going on. So
do you know where they're playing the Open?
Shinnecock.
Wrong. New York Golf Course.
Oh, yeah, I see what you did
for
there.
For this week, it's called New York Golf Course.
Yeah. These hydration breaks are all the rage here in the World Cup soccer. That golf course needed hydration breaks the last time the U.S. Open was played there. They were watering, I don't remember what green, maybe you do, 7 green. I just remember there was a green that was getting watered in between groups because it had become just unplayable through the weekend.
Yeah, I love that when I'm playing golf.
Yeah.
Unplayable greens. I need it to be harder.
Right.
I need golf to be harder.
Right.
It's too easy. John is with us. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good, John. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I had a couple. I'm kind of interested in your opinion. I've been watching your show for quite a while. I don't usually call in. But one thing, maybe I'm just a pessimistic one here, but is it being pessimistic to think that this great relationship between Brady and Allen is going to be the difference this year? Allen's not really been the problem, right? And now you bring in a new defensive coordinator who's trying to use players that were drafted for a different system. And this is supposed to, and then we look at the brutal schedule that we have. I don't really see where the Bills are going to be. I really don't see them going better than 11-6, maybe 10-7. So I just was curious about your opinion of that. And also, when you guys talk about GMs and making decisions, do you feel that sports radio, the way we have call-in shows now that we never used to have in the past, or at least over the last 15 years or whatever, that affects GM's decision making? I mean, if they're going to make a decision, say on Alex Tuch, at some level, they've got to have in the back of their mind, man, if I don't get this right, you know, it's going to be, I'm going to have to listen to this for years. So I was just curious. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
I love that question. I could go all day on that question.
You love it so much, you take a first crack at it. I mean, I have something that I doubt will change what I'm going to say.
I have always said, I think of Darcy Regier first for this. I've always said that, no, these general managers should not decide things based on the fans. And I'm going to take the caller talking about, like, talk shows or hosts as the fans. I think that's really what it is. No, it shouldn't come down to pleasing the fans, but I think you should always want to know what they're saying. And Regier, like a lot of people in that job, I think, want to tell you that they don't listen, that they don't pay attention to that. And I can see why, because it can be pretty harsh. I mean, very. But I still think in that job, you should have some feel for which way the wind is blowing with the fan base. And by the way, that's not always evident through our show. I mean, we might not get another call today. We might talk about Alex Tuch for an hour, but nobody necessarily will call in to discuss it. And so how much of a sample size are we working with,
right,
in the first place when I'm the GM trying to decide what to do? Think about Brandon Bean and receivers. You know, he had heard a lot of that and it got to him that day. Anyway, I think it's not like fans should do the job for you. I'm pretty sure that almost never happens, but I think it's important. It should be considered important. If I owned the team, I'd want to make sure my managers knew what it sounded like out here.
Yeah, I've always agreed with that. But like, you have an idea what your customers are saying. You can dismiss it because, you know, you're doing the job and you've got your decisions to make and your reasons for doing it, and you have to believe in that, and you shouldn't, I think, turn your back on what you think is right and what your team of people are telling you is right based on what a call-in show or a host sounds like. Here's an example of why it's can be very bad to do. Remember last summer? Like, I even made a spectacle of Kevin Adams talking about Samuelson in such a way that, like, he was offended by the trade rumors, and, like, he did not seem to realize that the fan base had really soured on this player. And if he had known, or maybe he did know and just didn't care or what, but if he had reacted to that and moved him, bought him out, like, I never said, like, buy him out, but I was done counting on him as being any kind of an important piece for this hockey team, which would have been extremely bad. Like, if Adams had reacted to what the fan base sounded like about Matias Samuelson, the Sabres would be out a $4.5 million hockey player who's playing like a $10 million hockey player for like the next 4 years. So you got to be very careful. I think so. That's why you can't, not to say that the fans or me or you are always going to be wrong about things like that. There's a case where I was, and the GM just ignored it, and they're way better off for it. So I don't think anyone worth their salt in that kind of job would react to what a host is saying. The front of that call, if we're good on that subject, the front of the call, like the Allen Brady relationship is not going to improve this team. The defense eventually, I think, will improve this team. I'm not looking at Joe Brady to get more out of Josh Allen. I'd like Josh Allen. I don't think I need Joe Brady to do this. He's had opportunities in a lot of these playoff games to come through at the end and hasn't. So that at some point hopefully will change, but I don't think it will have anything to do with Joe Brady. I guess it could. I mean, he's the new coach. He'll get credit if it changes, I guess, which is fine. I'm not going to throw myself in front of that bus. But I think the bigger question for this team to me is how quickly that defense can even be at a middle of the league level with the new schemes, new personnel. Does the personnel all fit? All that kind of thing. Like, I'm sort of bracing for, like, that's not going to sink their season, I don't think, but I'm bracing for, no, we really didn't have our guys. Because I think that's going to be sitting there all year. And it makes sense. I mean, it takes time to get exactly the kind of personnel with maybe some different traits than the guys you inherited.
I got into this a little bit yesterday, just trying to articulate what it is the Bills need to be better at, because I think we've been through so many, these playoff losses are so close. And is it one thing? I mean, we can't even necessarily agree on whether it's more the offense or the defense in these games that's more to blame. So that's tough, because I think I need one play. A few of these losses have been one thing, whether that's 13 seconds or the play to Kincaid where Kansas City came up with a blitz that the Bills didn't know what to do with. Then you have, you know, last year and all the little things that could have changed that outcome with Denver. So it sounds like a cop-out almost, but what I need this year is for that to be different. And that's not one thing. That's just sort of an execution point, offense or defense, when it comes down to the end. And that's where I think Brady can be a positive difference maker after years of watching McDermott's teams not be able to pull it off, is if Brady can... I mean, this is not a given. He was on the staff already, of course, but if he can come up with, all right, here, a version of what Spagnuolo did as their defensive coordinator, Kansas City. I mean, it doesn't have to be that he's the head coach for this, and so maybe I shouldn't give it too much credit, but just like, all right, we're in this position again. It's the divisional round. It's the AFC Championship. There's 2 minutes to go. Here.
I got a thing they're not going to see coming.
That's right. And again, well, he could have done that before, but that's what I'm hoping ends up being the story. with the Bills. Because even if they do win only 11 games, like the caller suggested, or even 10, probably they're in the playoffs. And then you got to do that.
Right.
Whatever that is, you've got to do that to make the story end differently than it has. Man, anybody want a piece of that second question? I don't know. Like I love talking about that. Not like it's not ego. It's not like us. It's just more all of us, the fan base.
Yep.
You know, who was I talking to about something similar to this just recently? I got to think about it. It got to Marshawn Lynch. We ended up talking about Marshawn Lynch, and like, well, pressure built from the outside.
Yep.
Negatively toward Marshawn Lynch. Now he's America's dad. But hey, at that time,
right,
it wasn't pretty around here. And I know somebody with the Bills blamed us for the fact that they ended up trading him. But, you know, we didn't trade him. They did. I don't know. There is some place for that kind of thinking that the caller asked about, that, you know, fans can get loud and think, and that can matter. 803-0550 if you want to join us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.